Welcome to the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast. July 21st, 2014, episode number 60, Riffing. Hey everyone, welcome to the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast. This is Kevin England. Uncharacteristically, I'm recording here on a Monday night. It's about 9:30 on the 21st. I was going to record last night, but just couldn't bring myself to do it. But this has been running through my mind all day, and I said, you know what, I'm going to go downstairs and start recording and see where it takes me. I have a boatload of topics. That's one of the main reasons why I wanted to get behind the microphone. So many interesting things to talk about here tonight, so let me lay out a little bit what's going to be in this episode. Local bear sighting right around the corner. It's time to bring up the bear fence topic again. This time I've taken farther action than I've ever taken. I'll take you through that. Bob Kloss and I have been chatting. Bob got to a little project where he's working on a bee tree and he's setting up a trap out. I'll tell you about that. Very interesting topic. The New Jersey Beekeepers Association, in cooperation with Representative Dancer, working on some legislation in New Jersey, four bills and two resolutions trying to go through, has passed the assembly. We'll tell you a little bit about what that is and how it's working out. I mentioned in the last episode that I built a new hive stand, and I wanted to talk about the video that I produced. I built another version of it and put that all together. I'll tell you about those resources. Those are the four segments for this episode. Maybe we'll throw something in along the way. Depends on how life goes. For Roundtable, have an excellent video from the New Jersey Beekeepers Association about pollinators. Talk a little bit about terminology. Carniolan. I'll explain that when I get there. A little story about Home Depot and BJ's warehouse and how they are eliminating plants with neonicotinoids. Upside down bees. Very interesting phenomenon. Maybe you can help me figure out what's going on. I wanted to share a little anecdote about getting recognized and a couple other odds and ends about what's going on and some things in recent past. So that's enough. How about we go into the local hive report? Let's get you up to speed on what's going on in our local bee yard. So there's 11 hives on the property. That's the same number as last episode, but one has changed. Didn't do anything last weekend, but got to go in the bees this weekend real slowly. You know, last weekend I was sick. It's the second time. I mentioned on one of the episodes I had the flu a short while back. I want to say two and a half weeks ago. Well, last weekend I was sick again and had flu-like symptoms. So I went to the doctors and got a Lyme test, and they came back and said, we can't tell. I don't know what that means. So I'm going back Wednesday to get checked again. I've just generally been feeling under the weather. Well, being out of commission last week wasn't conducive for the bees because I didn't get to go in the hives. And the grass is seriously mid-thigh almost. No, it's almost to the knees, but the grass has to be mowed in a big way out in the bee yard. But anyway, Bob came over, Bob Kloss, who I talk about frequently, bearing gifts. He brought me a nuke for the top bar hive. The sad story is the hive that we put in there was attempting to make a queen. The queen hatched out and apparently was out to get mated and never returned, and the hive succumbed. It is the most frustrating, very disheartening situation going. So Bob, to improve my spirits, he brought over one of his survivor hives. He had a nuke in his yard, an extra one, and he's just got just enough room for the hives that he had, and he had a spare, so he brought it over. We set it up on top of the top bar hive and opened up a frame underneath it, and then closed off everything so that the bees could only work going out of the bottom of the nuke and through the hole that goes to the outside. During the time that we were messing around in the bee yard, the bees figured that out, so that's pretty good. I was able to take the top off the roof of the hive and slide it over and set it there, and it's still closed up enough that the bees can't get out any other way but using the main entrance of the hive. The hope, want, and desire is that the bees will work their way down to some of the comb that I've left them down below and start building out a brood chamber, because it'll be closer to the entrance of the hive. We'll look and see how that experiment goes. And while we were looking at that, Bob and I were mentioning that it would be really cool to just take all these nukes and set them next to each other and overwinter them over top of that top bar. Once the top bar gets going and is running across, you could literally set nuke and nuke and nuke and nuke and nuke right across the top, or nuke in full-size colony, however we wanted to do it. So I guess I'm going to have to plan, but you know what? It's almost the end of July. It's very difficult to start building colonies at this point, but anyway, so we'll see what the fate is for that top bar hive, and Bob just has this passion that I have to have a top bar in operation, and I have to agree. So anywhere there were gaps, we taped them up, and I'll go back this weekend and check them out, see if they've moved down at all. Maybe they'll build some brood and move down, and we'll figure it out. One of the things we were talking about inside the nuke are full-size frames, and they have sides and bottoms, and you can't put them in the top bar. If, you know, worst comes to worst, maybe I'll find a bolt cutter and cut the sides and the bottoms off and trim up the comb, try not to waste any bees, and get them to the V shape that I can just set them down below. But we'll cross that bridge if we have to get to it. So one of the other running stories in our yard is about the Carniolan hive. Not Carniolian, as I've been saying in the last episode. Bob reminded me that's not how you say it. That queen was superseded and is mated. And unlike the top bar hive, that queen is starting to go. So we were in there on Sunday. We took a peek. She's got full frame out. We found the queen. She's very, very nice and pretty looking. So that hive has got a long way to go to get through winter. But hopefully, what we saw in there was a couple frames of brood ready to go. And in a week or two, they'll have some population. And we'll put some feed on them. And we'll see if that build that colony out. If worse comes to worse and they don't build out to a couple of boxes, we'll put them in a nuke and let them overwinter with one of the other nukes. So we started looking earlier in the day. I was out there to see whether or not the grass could be cut with my lawnmower, and it's a little bit too high. And I noticed all of this activity in front of the hives. At first I thought, well, maybe they're being robbed. I had learned that the farm operation out across from where my property exists has a huge number of hives. And whenever I see a huge number of bees at the entrance, I immediately start to think that this cloud is robbing the hives. Well, the funny thing is they were just flying, boiling at the entrance, flying and flying and flying and flying and flying. In the middle of the day, all five hives on the bench, sitting next to each other, doing the same thing. But nobody's darting in the entrance, and there did not appear to be anybody wrestling at the entrance. I really thought it was a robbing activity. And within a half hour, it subsided and everything went inside. Now, I know there's a period of time during the day that the sun just hits the right angle and everything's good, and the new bees come out and they do orientation flights. This was different. They weren't circling the hive. They would fly out of the entrance, go up, go over the hive, and then fly back down in front of the entrance, and then up and over the hive and back down. And they were just circling that way. Very strange looking thing. If anybody has any ideas as to what that activity is about. So tonight we had a short little planning meeting for an event we're doing on Wednesday. And I asked Stan Wozitowski, who's a veteran beekeeper, and he said he saw the same activity this week on one of his hives, and he's never seen that before. He, too, thought maybe it was robbing, but when he looked at it, he assessed it and said it's not robbing. So, very strange. Not sure what to make of it, but it is what it is. So, about an hour or so later, all the bees settled in, and then I stood and watched each entrance, and the pollen going in was just astonishing. 5 out of 6 bees going in the entrance had huge pollen baskets, a pale yellow lemony color, on every hive, all the way across. All the foragers were coming back, just pollen, pollen, pollen going in. So that to me means they're making a lot of bees. And I've been in the hives enough to know that they're all fully operational. When I pull them out, they've got carpets of brood. The queens are really good and going great. So the intention was to put this nuke into the top of our hive, but I lit the smoker. So we went in and looked at a bunch of the hives. If you've been following our yearly upgrade here, we started with a bunch of new hives. They were all single stories. 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, we put second stories on all of them. Well, as we went in and looked at them, Bob and I looked at probably 5 or 6 of the 11 hives, and they all had some wax. One hive had foundation and brood in the middle in the second box, but almost every one of them just had, they really weren't going to town in the upper box, which is what I wanted. So we pyramided up. We pulled 2 frames of brood out of the bottom boxes, and every box had brood and larvae and stores, and completely through the bottom box, but the top box was 10 frames of new foundation that we had just given them, with some comb built out. That's generally the pattern we saw over and over again. So we pulled 1 or 2 frames, sometimes 3 frames of brood if they could afford it. We put it in the top box and we interspersed drawn comb, brood frame, started to draw comb, brood frame, drawn comb, foundation, foundation, foundation on the outside. And we did that back and forth through about 5 or 6 hives. And I suspect when I go out over the weekend that they'll start drawing those. We took the frames that we pulled out of the top and we put them down in the bottom. Now the one thing I noticed is lots of pollen, lots of bees, lots of brood, not a lot of nectar. Almost every box was depleted of nectar. You would pull out a brood frame and look at it, and that traditional horseshoe of brood with honey stored up in the corners in the pollen ring, there was brood across the entire frame, and the upper corners were empty. There was no nectar to speak of. So Bob and I have been chatting, and he just kind of pointed a finger at me. And Bob doesn't like to feed. I don't like to feed. We don't like to treat. But if signs say you have to go that direction, and since these are all relatively new hives, they were made out of splits. They were made out of walkaway splits. They were made with new queens and some brood pulled out of different boxes. They really need to be fed. They don't have enough food. And in talking to all the beekeepers in the area, you know that the nectar flow is done. It's the end of July. And it hit it right, right? The expectation was July 15th, no more nectar flow. Bob's looking at his scale hive, and it's starting to lose weight. So in every one of the hives, they're really operating fine, but they need to be fed, I think. We moved the brood up to entice them to build, but if they don't have carbohydrates and something to work with, they're not going to be able to build. Now hold that thought. A recent news story came out and said how inappropriate honey is for feeding. Wait, inappropriate sugar is for feeding, and it's not quite the same. And I'm going to put that in one of these episodes, probably the next one. I have a cue where that story is sitting. But just in general here, God, it kills me that I don't have honey to feed back to them. But anyway, there was one embarrassing thing that I found in the cedar hive. For whatever reason, I must have run out of time. In the bottom box, there were 10, it was a 10 frame hive. There were only 7 frames, and they were in there haphazard. They built wonky comb. They built spare comb. Some of it had brood on it, and so on. We saw one frame that was sitting in there, and there was a frame that was missing. And between the 2 frames, where there should have been a frame, there was a complete set of honeycomb with brood on it. So I went to the garage and I had this frame with some foundation across the top, like a starter strip. And we took tape and we wrapped it around and put that in there and put it back in the hive. And we'll see what they can do with it. But at minimum, at least all the brood is going to hatch out in that. So that was a bit embarrassing, but the rest of the hives looked like they were in pretty good shape. So 11 hives, all of them operational. hopefully will go out and the bees will cooperate and move down out of that nuke into their new chamber in the top bar hive, and we're going to be good to go. I'm heading out Saturday to go to the races with the race team. We're going out to Lebanon Valley Speedway, which is way out somewhere, 2.5 hour ride or whatever. But I'm hoping in the morning to have the sugar mixed and put the feeders on and check that hive in particular and see how things are going. So, local hive report, check. Everything's operational, and we're in a watch still. We're trying to keep them going. If you have local hives and you started from scratch, be prepared here when the nectar flow tapers off to put some entrance guards in there, lest you be robbed. And they're going to taper down. They're not going to have it. If you have brand new hives and they're not built out in two boxes, you're going to want to consider feeding them to get them to September, October, if you're in the Northeast in the fall, winter flow. So, and now, if you have established hives, I'm not covering this in this episode, so I'm going to do this public service announcement now. July is the time to treat your bees. You want to do mite checks. Go watch the video on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/NWNJBA. Look up Varroa mites and Varroa count. I'll show you how to do a Varroa count with an alcohol wash. Now is the time. If you don't get rid of those mites now, take your honey off, do your treatments, but you got to get rid of them now so that you have several healthy brood cycles before you get into fall. Otherwise, your bees are not going to overwinter. Do yourself a service announcement. If you didn't follow from the last episode, go watch Tim Schuler, the state apiarist from New Jersey, talk about treatments for Varroa mites. The one we just posted at that YouTube channel. It's going to open your eyes that people who treat are the ones that survive in New Jersey, at least. I'm hoping someday to get to treatment free, but for right now, I'm going to tell you to follow the rules, because the ones that treat in New Jersey tend to have the bees that overwinter. Okay, where did I go? Let's close this down. We'll get into segment number one, which is about bear fencing. So I was saying there's a large farm operation about a mile as the crow flies from us. And segment number one is about bear fence shopping. My wife Sharon, and I always say Sharon said, and people don't know who she is. If you're new to the podcast, Sharon is my lovely wife. She stopped to buy corn at the operation, and she knows John Joe, who is the farmer. He's been there. She went to school with him through grade school and so on. Knows him very well. We know the family. Danny used to sell corn at the corner at the end of their driveway. Anyway, he mentioned that he had some bears walking the fence line, and they have a very large farm with a bunch of different things that they grow, all the produce for the farm stand and for the local supermarkets. They had bears circling the fence trying to figure out how to get in. And one of the things John Joe told Sharon that I didn't know about is they have 120 hives inside that property. Now, I know they had beehives, but I thought they were in the dozens, not in the hundreds. No wonder my hives got robbed last year, where they came from. It was like the swarm from who knows where. Well, now I know where they came from. So I was kind of surprised to learn that fact. But now, you know, a mile away you have a bear circling the fence. Last year there was a bear in the farm on the other corner opposite of me. That's two strikes. Three strikes, you're out. So I am in earnest trying to put together a game plan for a fence. I went out and measured the space that I have available to me for the bee yard, and I measured from the farthest corner to the farthest corner and all the way. And one of the things that Sharon and I have talked about is putting garden in over next to the bees somewhere, far enough away where you're not going to get stung. So we're working on an area 24 foot by 72 foot. And if I could cut that one tree down that's down along there, we could possibly extend that later. So a joint bear fence and garden area is the game plan. And I have a more cohesive plan. I put together a map. I went out and measured things. That's what I was doing out there when I saw the bees trying to do in that crazy circular thing. This is a Kevin moment. I'm a bit all over tonight. Can you tell? I didn't drink or eat anything funny. I'm just in that kind of mood. But anyway, end of Kevin moment. Sharon went with me when we went to Tractor Supply, which is our local supply store that we can look at fencing materials. We looked at everything that's necessary. Wood posts, metal posts, hangers, ground rods, charger units. We have no electricity out there, so it's going to have to be solar. We looked at the fencing materials, looked at the different gate options, looked at the different tools and utilities that you need. I've been watching videos from the New Jersey Division of Fish and Wildlife and what they recommend for fencing and how bears work. I've also looked at the videos that we've shot, and I have a pretty cohesive plan. What I don't have is a taste for digging all the holes, and I just wince at the amount of money this is all going to cost. Who knew getting into beekeeping would be so expensive? So it's expensive, and it's a lot of labor, but it's a foregone conclusion. It has to happen. The one thing that I want to do, just as a very neighborly thing, is call the neighbors and let them know at the side of their cornfield, which I don't think they'll have a problem with, we're going to build a fencing system for our bees. Now, I've said this to two families adjacent to us. The grandfather of those families used to be the New Jersey State Apiarist. So they have no problem with bees. In fact, they're very good with it. And my plan is to do it a bit at a time. Dig the fence posts, put those in, get the wire set up, run that around, build the doors, and so on. I'm not so concerned about a bear at this time because we've never seen one on the property. But every day I come home praying that the bear hasn't found us. So, you know, I'm playing roulette. I've said that before. One of the things that's difficult for us is our property runs on a slight slope going uphill. So one of the things you could do is buy a preset metal big huge fence thing. Can't use that because the land is tilted and it has holes. The other thing is, all the land where my bees are used to be like a brushy area that was probably up to your chest, and I cut it all back and I knocked out all the multi-flora rows and so on. But underneath that, there used to be groundhogs. And I have holes throughout my yard where they're still there, right underneath the stand where I have my top bar hive. There's a hole. It's probably 8-10 inches in diameter. Bob was walking around, the grass was really high, and I said to him, don't step in a hole, it'll suck you up, right? So if I put this fence in, I'm going to fence the groundhog inside the fence. So there's a couple of interesting things to figure that out. So anyway, I have the laundry list of parts. I took photographs of what each piece is going to cost, and what I'm going to do next is build a shopping list. I know how much the wooden posts are, I know how many I need. I know how much metal posts are. I know how much I need. I have to figure out how much wire I need to run 4 strands all the way around the dimension. I've been looking at different energizers. I see the one that they have for sale at the Tractor Supply. I'm not sure if I'm enamored by it. It looks cheap and chintzy. I'd rather go to, say, Amazon.com and look at what they have and buy one that people have given positive recommendations. I've also seen the Gallagher Fence people who build what looks to be more industrial style stuff. So I have a decision to make on the energizer. And then, you know, all the stuff like the clips to hold the wire and the grounding rods. That is one of the things that concerns me the most, is we live in very shale rich area. Dig a foot down and you're on a shale bed. And you're supposed to take a 6-foot rod and drive it straight down through the ground. I have no idea whether that's even accomplishable where I'm at. I know one of the things you could do is take a 6-foot rod and drive it at an angle, but that's the biggest thing that I've heard a lot of people say they've had problems with. I guess I'll cross that bridge when I get to it. The other thing I'm thinking about is, that's a lot of posts. in my plan, because you got to have them at least on every corner, and every door has to have a post on each side, and I want to build two doors. And when you're running a stretch of 72 feet, you have to have some wooden posts in between to give the thing structural integrity. So do I rent a post hole digger, one of those machines, or do I try and find somebody with a tractor that can just run it down? That's really the right way to do it, by the way. So anyway, I'm doing my homework, and I fully intend this time, no doubt, I'm going to carry through. Not this weekend, but next weekend, I'm probably going to start placing the order, and I'll be out digging holes. So if you want to, you know, if you're an hour's drive of my hometown, come on over, I'll give you a shovel. All right, that's the story on the fence. Everybody keep your fingers crossed and say a little prayer at night that the bears don't come to visit us before we get this thing built. And thank you for that. For segment number two, I want to talk about a trap out. So while I was sick the previous weekend, Bob Kloss sent me a note and said someone called him about bees living in a tree. And the fortunate thing is they're about belly button high to shoulder high. They're in this seam in this huge ash tree. And the homeowner is allergic, and they're by her gardens. And while she understands the benefits of the bees, the last thing she wants to do is kill them. She has to have them out of there, but she just can't risk being stung. So it's an odd time to try and do this activity, but Bob was game to do it. And he went a couple times there and has run through some iterations of setting up a trap out. And the way that it works, this is ingenious. He's following a method by somebody called Hogan, which he found on the internet. So if, Mr. Hogan, you are listening, thank you for sharing your contribution to beekeepers. You hang a hive against a tree. So he has enough room to put a PVC pipe in the hole where the bees are emerging. And then he used coroplast material, which is the signboard stuff that you see for, you know, out for politicians when it's election season. He cut some of that out, and he put a hole in it, and he put the PVC pipe through it, and then he stuck the pipe in the hole, and he used nails to nail the coroplast to the tree. And everywhere there was a gap between the bark and the coroplast, he took steel wool and he put it in to close the gaps so the bees can only come in and out of the PVC tube. His videos that he shot, and we'll be putting together a video expose on this, shows that the bees were a little confused at first. They could get out, but they were landing on the tree and not able to get in. But eventually they figured it out, and then they were coming and going through the tube. The next go around, what he did was he set this, it's close enough to the ground where he can put an A-frame ladder, a small little step stool, and a couple boards, and then he set a cardboard nuke that he put to the shape of the coroplast, which was the same dimension as the end of this nuke. And he put it all together, and he has it sitting there, fastened. And then he ran some lashing straps around the tree, and he has it sitting there. And the whole point of this is that the bees are going to emerge in and out of the tube and into the nuke chamber. There's a hole in the front on the bottom, and when he closed it off, that becomes the new entrance in and out of the hive. Now, the other thing that he did was he has, it's a 5-frame nuke box. He has 2 frames of drawn brood comb on either side. And the premise of this is the smell of that brood comb will make the queen inside the tree come out and say, "What's going on out here? There's brood." And if the queen exits, she doesn't go back in. And the way that he assures this is he made a bee escape. So we let them get used to the first round of just the tube. And then he put the box on the outside, and eventually he will put the bee escape on there, and they'll be able to come out, but they won't be able to go in. It's a really ingenious system, and when he's done, I'll put the video up. He's been channeling his inner Kevin and filming each piece and loading them up to our SkyDrive, OneDrive cloud so that we can come back and produce a video. So at some point, the premise of this is when the queen comes out and then she starts laying inside the nuke box and that becomes a colony and all the bees that are exiting can't go back in because of the escape that he's going to build. Here's a problem. Inside the tree, they could make a new queen because the queen didn't return. They have eggs, they have larvae, they can do that. So what do you do? He's thinking, and he and I were having a discussion. I was driving home from work on my wireless hands-free, and he was doing the same, and the two of us were having conversation about the timing of all this. It was a fascinating conversation, like, will they keep making queens in there? Fact of the matter is they can't, because they're going to make a queen maybe once, and after the queen emerges, she's going to have to come out to be mated. And when she comes through that tube, there will be no more new brood, and she cannot get back in because it's a one-way. Eventually, they will go queenless inside, and hopefully all the bees inside the tree will eventually vacate the tree, come out into the nuke. And then you'll have all the bees outside. That's the premise of this. So it's July, and this is going to take over the course of a couple weeks. I think he started like the 4th of July or around the time frame, just after. And it's the 21st of July. And he's run through the pieces to the point where he has now the nuke fastened to the tree. And the bees are coming and going in there. So this is really cool. It's a cool exercise. You have to understand the biology. The good news for him is it's high enough where he could stand right there and operate the whole thing. He's not standing on a ladder or a scaffold or up in a tree or whatever. And presumably these are bees that live in a tree. Maybe they're not 90 feet in the air, but they are probably feral. They've been in there a while, according to the homeowner. So this is good stock to get a hold of. And at some point, I think when Bob goes back, the next couple iterations, I'm going to try and get over there with him. I haven't seen it yet, but I've been watching the videos that he's been uploading, and they're just outstanding. So really cool exercise, and looking forward to see how that concludes and learning about it. So that's it. When it's ready, we'll post the video up, and maybe the next episode will give you an update on how things are going. For segment number 3, I want to do a follow-up on the New Jersey beekeeping legislation. I've mentioned that before here. There's a series of 4 bills that have been introduced and approved through the Assembly at this point. Let me just do a quick review of what they are. The first one extends the right to farm protection to commercial beekeepers. If a complaint is filed against a commercial beekeeper, right now it goes to the municipal courts, and they just don't understand the topic. The legislation proposals that will go to a county agricultural board instead of a municipal court, and they are more prepared to be able to address the situation in a fair and equitable manner to the commercial beekeeper. The second legislation is a bill that states the New Jersey Department of Agriculture will have oversight over the best management practice for hobbyists, and it makes the state responsible, not the local municipalities. Again, no dig against the municipalities. Some of them are very good, but certain ones have not gone very favorably for hobby beekeepers because they just don't understand the topic really well. In fact, some municipalities, just as recently as this year, have been banning beehives in situations, and they're leaving people who are current beekeepers in the municipality in a state of non-compliance. So, you know, a lot of these times there are beekeepers who are not behaving, and unfortunately the reaction at the municipal level is often an overreaction, but that's just not good for good beekeepers. Bad beekeepers are just a part of life. Everybody should not get punished, and at this point hopefully the Department of Agriculture, and specifically the state apiarist who has a big voice there, will be more fair and equitable to the situation. The third bill establishes a fine of $500 for intentionally destroying a man-made native beehive. It's not about the honeybee, but native bees that are native to the state and provide pollination for crops and plants. And there's so many various pollinators out there that do more than just what the honeybees do. It's really important to protect them, so good for New Jersey on this one. The last bill designates the common eastern bumblebee as a New Jersey state native pollinator. The honeybee is already the state's insects. Accompanying the four bills are two resolutions. One of them is just to designate a pollinator week in New Jersey, and the other one urges New Jersey residents to support beekeepers for buying honey produced in the state. All good stuff through the assembly, and we're keeping an eye on that. And again, as we've said in the past, Jenna Katz, the New Jersey Beekeepers Association president, Dave Frank, a beekeeper local in the area, part of the New Jersey Beekeepers Association, has been helping out with that, and countless others behind the scenes, including Representative Dancer, who is sponsoring these. We keep our eye towards them. There's a lot of support from other organizations in the state that is helping this situation, and it's really about good relationships from the Beekeepers Association. You know, people want to question sometimes what the value is of a state agency. These folks who have gone to bat for various beekeepers around the state with different conflicts and have been advocating through the League of Municipalities and others, I have to say, on a general whole, I don't see why anybody wouldn't support a state beekeeping organization who represents the voice of the beekeeper, and in this case, they're doing a spectacular job. For segment number four, I wanted to give a second mention about a hive stand video that I created recently and posted to the YouTube channel that I mentioned earlier, youtube.com/NWNJBA. This is the second version of a BKA Corner hive stand. And I mentioned it before, it was built by a shelving unit that I bought from Home Depot. It's HDX brand, and I've repurposed it and built a PVC base for it. One of the things I wanted to say, besides the fact that the video is up, if you want to get the dimensions and see how it's built, I recently came across a website, FormUFit, all one word, where they sell PVC pipe furniture grade. This is not the white PVC pipe that you find in the box store with the markings that you use to run water lines in your house, but something different. It's the same type of material, but the plastic is made with UV protection, and it has a shiny finish, and it's made for furniture. The fittings are different. They have tapered edges so that they don't pinch. If you made a chair out of it, you wouldn't scratch yourself. They go together the same way, and they have different form factors in the fittings. The way that the joiners work together, they have 2, 4, 5 outlets, all different things if you're making certain kind of furniture. If you go to the website and look, people have plans for making chicken tractors and chicken huts and, you know, all kinds of creative furniture and tools and utilities. One, you can buy different fittings to put wheels on these. And today, driving to work, I noticed someone alongside the road had this huge cart thing that they put all their garbage cans in with wheels on it that they made out of PVC. Somebody's really dreaming in a Kevin kind of way of how to use PVC. Sharon teases me all the time that I could just about build anything out of PVC. Anyway, with some of the donations that I've received for the podcast, I'm actually going to order some of these materials and build two additional ones that I'll have for showcase. If you want to see what that looks like, go check out the YouTube channel, and I'll post a picture of the one that I created for the video out to our Facebook page, facebook.com/beekeeperscorner, so you can take a look at that. I'm pretty happy with the design, and I think I'm going to build a lot more of these. Not that I didn't like the first design, and by the way, I think in the last 3 weeks, I've seen indication, gotten videos, received emails about the first design and the number of people who built those. I am so surprised by the number of people who took those plans and put them up. I've seen videos on YouTube crediting things that we've, you know, using the design. And I think once a week lately, I've gotten pictures from people who've used that. If you built it, thank you. That's great. I think that's just so cool that the idea has taken off. Just like last time, the Avast virus database has been updated. That's this week's public service announcement. Keep your virus updates. Anyway, that's enough about the Hive Stand. Let's move now from segments to a run of roundtables, whole bunch of things to cover. Let's see what's on first. It's time for the roundtable section of the podcast. I think I need to do a Kiwi Mana little music interlude to come into this. Maybe, Gary, you can send me over some music. The first one is about an excellent video released with the New Jersey Beekeepers Association. They did a New Jersey crop block grant this year, and two major parts of the program were to grow plants, to disseminate native plants for pollinators, and they're giving them to Beekeepers Association for their local fairs to hand out. Given that the Warren County Fair is this weekend coming up, we're getting a number of plants which we will hand out to people come and visit our booth. And we'll also have them for the Huntington County Fair sometime in October. So the second part of the grant was about making a pollinator video, and the video they shot is just outstanding. It talks about the plight of the bees. It shows how they pollinate. It talks about native pollinators, not just honeybees, and it has pictures, great graphics, good narration, and it's just a really good quality informational video. It's short enough that someone could sit there and watch it, but it's informative enough to pack enough information to get everybody the general concept of how important pollinators are. And, you know, some of the things that they're doing with native plants, the ideas are coming even at the national level. This doesn't have to do with NJBA, but I know there's an interest with us. I'm a member of the NJBA through the Northwest New Jersey Beekeepers Association, to communicate about building causeways and areas where maybe utility tracks run through to put in pollinator habitat and rebuild that in the New Jersey region. Anywhere telephone lines are going through, or center medians, or gas lines and things like that. I don't know about electrical lines. We have those huge towers with the high tension lines going through. I don't know if we want bees underneath them. They don't seem to do very well under there. But the general gist is that this is one of the first steps in getting information to the public about the importance of native pollinator plants. And specifically, the message here is about putting plants up to allow pollination, not just in the spring, but throughout the year, right? We'll have the chance while we're handing somebody a plant to talk about the importance of this. And what a great program spearheaded by the New Jersey Beekeepers Association. And I'm probably going to forget a lot of people, but I will give a tip of the cap to Joe Alvarez, who's one of the instrumental people working in the plants and the dissemination and all that stuff. Kudos to NJBA for this one. For round table number two, I want to talk about a topic closely related to round table number one. This one comes by a report in the magazine Edible Jersey. It's the summer 2014 edition. Every 5 years, the U.S. Department of Agriculture releases a census of agriculture on a state-by-state accounting, and they had some numbers in there for New Jersey that I found interesting. In 2007, the last time the census was taken, there were 10,327 farms in New Jersey. It is now down 12%, and the new number is 9,071. The number of acres for each of these farms has also declined. It was 733,450 acres in 2007 being farmed in New Jersey, and now we're to 715,057 That's a drop of 2.5%. So that's not terrible, but it's still a drop. And that means less habitat for the bees to work, is the way I see it. And less farms, so who knows what pollination and other benefits they have. And I mentioned before that I have this farm operation, even though they have a number of hives. My guess is a lot of the pollination and pollen that my bees are pulling are coming from the diversity of plants, cucumbers and squash and watermelon and other kinds of melons and pumpkins and you name it. They're planting all kinds of stuff over there. So, and I know it's a really large tract and it's within a mile of my property, so I'm sure my bees are foraging over there. So had that operation shut down, as an example, it would be a big detriment to us. The good news is the average farm size increased from 71 acres to 79 acres. So we have less farms, but they're a little bit bigger than they were. And this is a troubling number, and I've seen this around here when we talk to our farmers. The average age of the New Jersey farmer rose from 57.1 years on average to 59.5. Now, one of the things you can probably guess is community-supported agriculture is a hot topic right now. Direct sales to consumers through roadside stands, farmers market, pick your own, and things like that are very popular with the slow food movement and the green times that we live in now. And the good news is the monies that have been raised since the last report went from $30.1 million in 2007 to $33.3 million. That's good, because at minimum, if they're making more money, that could be more incentive to get into farming. So here's the public service announcement. Keep more of our land in farming, and then have that communication with the farmers, which I'll talk about in a second, and give yourselves more habitat for your bees to work. What can you do to sustain Garden State Farms or wherever you live? Buy local. Go to pick your own stuff. Buy local cheese making, which is going to be supporting the dairy industry. Ask your supermarkets to buy their produce local, not from afar. And support your farm stands, who also sell honey as an added benefit. So you could take in the local wares. Now, one of the things we're doing here for our Beekeepers Association is aligning with our farmers in this area, Hunterdon and Warren, this Wednesday night. In fact, we're going to a dinner, and we're going to have a booth there, and we're going to talk about pollinators and the importance of partnerships. And we'll try and emphasize the message about pesticides and proper management, and don't farm every single inch of your property. Leave a little bit for the pollinators, and your crops will be better for it, that type of message. We're also going to speak as a featured presenter in the December time frame for an hour at their annual banquet. Looking forward, and actually had a meeting this evening to talk about those activities and planning for it, so we give the right message. So make an alliance with your farmers where you are, if you have farmers, or anybody producing crops, even in the backyard, right? You can help your neighbors with their gardens with the pollinator message, and less pesticides and more responsible weed control and things like that. Okay, public service announcement over. Let's go on to the next roundtable topic. For roundtable number three, I wanted to talk about the change at Home Depot's and at BJ's Wholesale Markets. We have a lot of these around our area. I posted this up to our Facebook page. It's been a very popular post. We've seen overseas a lot of beekeepers and advocacy for removing neonicotinoid plants out of some of these home centers, which are being shuffled off to local yards. And now it looks like some of those pressures are trying to influence, or starting to influence, some of the bigger companies here in the United States. The White House announced a new task force to better protect our pollinators. And a week following that, Home Depot and BJ's Wholesale Clubs announced they were taking steps to change their plant inventory away from bee-killing pesticides, which are in there, and specifically to the layman, they've been pre-treated with neonicotinoids, and people are bringing these home and planting them in their gardens, which are not very helpful. So Home Depot has committed to, by the end of this year, make sure that any plants they sell that are that use neonicotinoids are labeled as such. And BJ's has indicated that they're actually going to start phasing out the practice, and the plants that they sell will be neonicotinoid free. Or, as Home Depot has, they will have warning labels. So as I mentioned, this follows on the heels of UK's largest wholesalers announcing last year that they were going to stop stocking plants that had neonicotinoids. At least in the United States, they haven't gone that far, but they're heading in the right direction. Now we need Lowe's and other resellers to follow the lead of Home Depot and BJ's, and we wish that the president's announcement is going to result in some meaningful change and also support of research. We can only hope that the government is going to start to get on board as to how important this is. For roundtable number four, I wanted to cover off some listener mail. The first one comes in from Steve Bugnacki. Steve sent us over a short video on an instant hanging frame and a queen marking device that he made, and these are both really cool. And how about it, Steve? You got a knack there for the video. I think we're going to have to do an interview with you because you sounded like a natural here. The first one is he took a frame with no foundation and he used hardware cloth. He attached it to the top of the frame. He bent it down one side and then he curled it back up, and it looks like he cut the cross wires off so that they became spikes. And this is in relation to the church cutout that we did, where we take the comb and tried to tape it, string it, hang it from these frames. This lets you take it flat on a table and take your comb and push it down through, and this wire contraption that he made sticks up through the comb and lets the comb hang from it. Very ingenious. The other one almost looks like an eyeglass or a magnifying glass, but instead of glass, it has a wire mesh and it has a handle on it. And from what I understand, Steve, the way you said you use this is you pull out the frame and you find the queen, and you just take it and you lay it down on the frame, and she gets trapped underneath the wire with some minor pressure, and then you just take the paint out and you paint her. This negates the need to have to scoop her up in a tube like the way that I described I had been marking my queens. And that's maybe not a terribly risky thing, but it could be fraught with peril. If you do it wrong, you damage a queen, and so on. This is down and dirty, where you just trap her against a comb, give her a quick paint job, and you let her go. So pretty neat devices, and thanks, Steve, for sending those videos over. It made it very clear as to what you were trying to describe to me. Next listener mail comes from David Weldon. He says, I'm a Canadian and currently live in Victoria, British Columbia. His American ancestors homesteaded on the Canadian prairies. His grandmother was from Youngstown, New York, and grandfather was Weldon, somewhere near the upper state New York area. He has a cottage where he keeps his bees, which is about 30 minutes from downtown Vancouver, British Columbia. His property is actually in Point Roberts, Washington. And what he says, if I have that right, I think I got that wrong. But anyway, the 49th parallel cuts off the tip of the Canadian peninsula that is Point Roberts, Washington. And that is apparently where he is. Yeah, I did have that right. If not, you have to forgive me. It's getting late. And I get a little loopy when I'm tired. He goes through a couple points of interest. One thing that I noticed is he did a one-day workshop with Sue Kobe. And he said at the time he didn't realize who it is. Well, actually, that's whose queens I have. The recent The recent Carniolan queens that I have came from Sue Kobe. He's got a couple of bees that he put together, one package from California and one from Weaver in Texas. He's had an eventful season. One was queenless. He says maybe his doing, but don't be so hard on yourself there, David. The other one, swarming, but he managed to capture the swarm, and now he has three hives. So that's a productivity gain there. His main focus, as it should be, is to get the bees through the winter. And hopefully we've given you some guidance to help you along the way. And he has these three full-size colonies and two nucleus hives that he's trying to do his best to overwinter. One of the things that he mentions in here is he's listened to all the podcasts at least once, and some of them three or four times. Oy! I don't know if I could even listen to myself three or four times, so hang in there, David. I wish you the best in being self-sustaining, and I really want to say thanks for writing in. It's these short little emails that I get from folks telling me what they're doing that makes me know that there's others out there trying to find their way, and I wish you the best in your beekeeping endeavors, and thank you to you and all the others who take the time to write in. So I have one more to share here in this roundtable. It comes from Joe Leidick. Joe and his wife are beekeepers in the Pittsburgh area, and he's been listening to the podcast since day one, as he says. They made a couple of videos recently that they wanted to pass along, and I will post these up in our show notes and out there. One of them is a video about keeping ants out of your hive, and the other one is about making a crush and strain bucket setup, which is always useful. I see also from his channel he has another video on how to harvest honey, a little tutorial using a centrifuge. So that's cool. Keep them going, Joe. They look great. You can go to YouTube and type Joe Leidick. J-O-E-L-Y-D-I-C is how you spell his name. Or again, you can go to the show notes. And, you know, it's funny I didn't mention that. You can go and figure out what we've been talking about all episode in our show notes for this episode number 60. Go to bkcorner.org or .com, your choice, and look at the show notes for number 60. You'll see each segment spelled out as to how long it was, when it stops, when it starts, and any links to resources that we talked about in this show and all the shows previously. So thanks to you guys for writing in, and to everybody who writes in. We appreciate it. You can send an email to us. Kevin at BKCorner is my address if you want to send something over. I read everything, and I try to respond to everything as much as I can. I've recently seen this spate. Somehow my email has been given to some spammer, and I know I'm a big guy, but they really want me to lose weight. All these emails, spam messages that keep coming through, it's going to drive me nuts. I'm going to have to go back and figure out how to de-spam these things a little bit better so I can actually get to my mail that's in there. All right, moving on. Roundtable number 5. I wanted to talk about the short little clip that I captured the other day while I was out of my hive. I was looking at the cedar hive, and this is called upside down bees. I'm watching the bees come out of the entrance, and the bees are pouring through the front every second, 2, 3, 5, 10 a second coming through at various patterns, all the foragers returning, loaded with pollen baskets. You could see them landing. They didn't seem to be bringing in a lot of nectar, but everybody coming in had pollen. The bees coming out, it looked like, if I could describe it, walking down the inside of the face of the hive. And then when they got to the bottom board, they fell out of the hive, landed on their back, flipped themselves over, and immediately took off. Every other bee, or just about every bee coming out of the entrance, fell down on its back. Some of them were literally stuck there like a turtle on its back trying to figure out. And then they'd flip over and they'd fly away. It was the strangest thing. I'd never seen this before. So I shot a video. It's about a minute and a half. I'm going to put it up on the YouTube channel. And if you have an idea of what the heck was going on, the cedar hive has planks in the bottom of the bottom board. And where the planks came together, they were tapered, and there's this V notch. The one thing I was thinking of is they come down and hit that notch, and it flips them over. And they seemed to hit that notch every time they came down, just by the way the inside of the frame face, or the frame, the box face that they were traversing to come down lined up. But I can't believe this thing wrecked every bee. I've seen so many bees come out of a hive. They come down, they walk out, they go away. This was really strange. So you want to see this one? Go check it out, youtube.com/NWNJBA, and look for upside down bees. We'll get that video posted up there. You can give your hypothesis about what's been going on. So round table number 6. This one's about getting recognized, but not in the way you would think. So Sharon has a friend, her name is Stacy, and she was visiting the other day and passed on an amusing story at our kitchen table. She has a friend who we've met, Stacy has a friend who we've met a couple times, her name is Gail. A lot of times when our kids are playing together doing baseball or soccer or whatever, Gail comes along to watch. So it turns out Gail's husband has recently become a beekeeper and apparently has found our podcast. He was listening to an episode, and Gail, who doesn't know that I do a podcast and the beekeeping thing, said to him, "I know that voice." She could hear him playing it when they were in their house. "I know that voice. I know that voice." And I suppose I have a distinctive voice, and I get recognized in public sometimes as the guy who does the podcast, but usually it's at a beekeeping event. So it's always flattering when somebody walks up and says, you're that guy. I've had people sitting behind me and they hear me talk and recognize me. But this one was really weird because it was totally unrelated to the beekeeping community, so to speak. So, if you ever run across me and you happen to hear me at a beekeeping event, please feel free to say hello. I'd be flattered. I enjoy crossing paths with listeners. It's not an ego thing. It's just kind of cool to meet the brethren of beekeeping and the brothers and sisters who are part of the brotherhood of... yeah. I told you it's getting late. And I do enjoy sharing stories and hearing about what you're doing. So, Rich, tell Gail I said hello and give me a call sometime. That's for you. So with that last little bit, we've just crossed over the hour mark, so time to shut this down. A couple last closing comments. There was an error on the last episode. Right at the end got cut off, and I won't spoil it, but it was my father's birthday when we did that, and I had a little shout-out to him. And if you have the opportunity, pull the latest, that last episode down and listen to the end. It's just about 2 minutes worth of a little commentary, but... it really makes you appreciate life when you listen to that. So my little reflection. Closing comments. The Warren County Fair is this weekend coming up. As I said, I think I'm going to go out to the races on Saturday with our race team. And perhaps I'll work the fair on Sunday. I'm not sure if I'll get a chance to get up there during the week, as I'm so far away in Princeton that I can't get out there with any meaningful contribution. So we're going racing this weekend, and today is July 21st. It's the third year anniversary of the loss of my brother, who was the inspiration for racing for our family. My father raced in the 60s, but I never got to see him race. But we spent much of our time in youth going to the races with my brother's race team. So Joe, thinking of you. And I wanted to end on a nice note. The PayPal donations, a couple of them have come in, and I really do want to say a genuinely thank you for those. One of the things I was debating on is whether I should build any of those hive stands with the special PVC. I had just purchased enough PVC from the box store to finish them off, but because I want to build a couple of those, what I'm going to do is take the money that was sent in to supplement. I don't think there's enough there to pay for it, but it'll at least help defray the cost and keep the boss from yelling at me. So going to use that donation as part of the funding for the PVC order for making a couple new hive stands with the UVC protected thing. And that's really what I'm after, is that I don't really want to have to paint the PVC like I've done in the past, and it's UV protection. And when I put that video out there, I'll get far less questions about will it hold up in the sun. I've been asked 8 million times about the version one hive stand that I built that wasn't painted. And, you know, it's going to break. It's going to be brittle. It's not going to last. They're out there for, I think, almost 3 years now. And they look as good as brand new. They haven't even discolored. So I believe everybody. Don't get me wrong. But at this junction, they're holding up just fine. So I'm going to keep using them until they collapse underneath and there's bees all over the place. But this solves the problem. And the cost of this PVC is maybe even on some parts and 10, 20, 30% on other parts. For some reason, a T-connector is like three times the cost of a regular one that I can get from Home Depot or Lowe's. But the corner ones are maybe 5 cents more. So go figure why it is that way. I don't know. The good news is this is pretty neat stuff, and it comes in yellow and red and green and blue and different bright shiny colors. So it's kind of like new phones that come out with all these cases that are neon yellow and cyan and whatever. This is going to be really trick looking hive stand, I can promise you. So that's in the future. Next couple weeks we'll get to that order and build one of those and put that up and show people. Append it to the video that I talked about in the opening. So as I scrub my notes, I think that's it. There was one feature that I wanted to do, as I mentioned earlier, about honey versus sugar and the impact of the bees, but I actually think that's good for a feature, so I'll save it for next time. And that brings to a close this episode. I want to say thanks to everybody for checking in, and thanks for listening. We really appreciate your support of the Beekeeper's Corner podcast. Be well, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. Take care.